I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Welcome to Spoiler Alert, the special movie challenge.
Yeah. So you might remember last month we decided to set ourselves a bit of a challenge. We'd each pick a movie for each other to watch and review. Mm-hmm. And so what did you pick for me again, Duncan?
I picked Sweet Movie.
Yes, you did, but you offered me kind of a Sophie's Choice of films.
That's right. It was either Sweet Movie, 1974 from the former Yugoslavia, yeah, or a film which was in competition at Cannes, apparently, or Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill.
Which probably
Adam,
was also...
Adam Sandler and Al Pacino.
Yeah, which is also a competition at Cannes, I would
have thought. Yeah, probably. And I asked you to watch the Val Lewton horror, The Seventh Victim.
That's right, from 1943, I believe.
Yeah, 43, yeah.
And so which did you go for? Did you go for Sweet Movie or did you
went for Sweet Movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I totally went for Sweet Movie.
Okay, okay.
I could not face the idea of another Sandler film, and okay, Sweet Movie sounded intriguing and fascinating and unlike anything I'd ever seen.
Okay, so which would you like to discuss first?
Well, I'm happy to kick off with Sweet Movie.
Okay.
All right. So this is Sweet Movie, directed by Dusan Makavejev.
Pronunciation.
Well, you know, I just think go in with confidence.
Yeah.
It's probably completely wrong. And starring Cara Loar, Pierre Clemente, and Anna Pushnell. Mm-hmm. So the nearly mute, virginal Miss Canada wins herself the opportunity to marry the obscenely rich Mr. Capital after a live television once-over by a gynecologist who describes her womanhood as both the most incredible he'd ever witnessed and like a rose. Alas, marital life begins badly when Mr. Capital treats her to a golden shower by his semi-erect golden penis. I kid you not, this is a penis coated in gold. Miss Canada escapes her wedding and after a number of bizarre sexcapades finds herself a member of a commune which she's cared for in the midst of a feast that degenerates into vomiting, urinating onto the food and each other before moving on to a defecation competition. Eventually, Miss Canada ends up smothering her naked body in chocolate for a television commercial.
So basically a spoiler alert Christmas party.
Yeah, that'd be weird because it's just us though, eh?
Yeah, that would be
So intercut with that story, that's really alarming. It's the story of Anna, the pilot of a sugar-laden barge with a large model of Karl Marx's head on its prow. It makes its way down a series of canals in the Netherlands. Anna picks up and seduces a young soldier named Potemkin, but also stops to gather up a bunch of children who she strips for, sleeps with, possibly, and it is suggested, murders. There you go.
Well, that's a really good sum up, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this film is all over the place.
You've watched it now?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, this will be interesting. Now, spoiler alert has a tradition of steering clear of the potty mouth language. We like to keep our podcast clean. Mm. But this month, that's kind of going to be a bit impossible because, well, I won't be engaging in sweary words. There's no way you can do credit to Sweet Movie without the language getting a little bit mucky, I think. I feel you would need a hot bath if you just listened to that plot synopsis. And I don't want to sugarcoat this. Sweet Movie is as filthy a film the side of Salo as you're going to get.
Yeah. Unlike them, they sugarcoat a lot in that.
Yeah.
Like literally.
Totally. So a little bit of a history lesson is probably required here before we get into the grubby heart of this film. First director Makavejev was born in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, now part of Serbia, and became a leading voice in the Black Wave, a film movement known for its dark humour, unorthodox approach to filmmaking, and skewering of Yugoslavian society. Makavejev would be forced to flee Yugoslavia, perhaps during the filming of Sweet Movie. Sources are a little bit vague on this. It could be beforehand. And he filmed most of the film in Canada and France before making his most accessible movie, the Eric Roberts starring vehicle, The Coca-Cola Kid, in 1985. Nowadays, he lectures on film. And I think sometimes we think of films as little hermetically sealed capsules of a director's intent that we can analyse and pick over without acknowledging. Sometimes stuff just kind of happens. But being forced to leave the country you grew up in and finish his film as a gypsy must have altered the way Sweet Movie turned out. As did having the lovely Cara Loar, Miss Canada herself, quit the film after a scene where she was required to fondle a penis as if it were like a pet rabbit, you know? Yep. Her departure led to the truncating of her story and the addition of the entire Anna B plot, which wasn't part of the original movie. So Sweet Movie may not have been the film it set out to be, and yet the two stories seem to complement and comment upon each other pretty naturally. So that you'd be kind of certain that they were always intended to live side by side. you know, all of the speculation on my part might just be a ruse to avoid having to talk about the scene where one dude pisses in another dude's mouth. Who knows? So, look, I'll get to the piss swallowing eventually, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I promise you.
Well, that's why I'm recording this.
That's why you're listening, right? Sure. Sweet movie with its twin storylines is kind of a double-barreled critique of political systems. Mr. Capital represents an obnoxious, foul, money-grubbing West. Before he hoses off his new wife with his gilded cock, he scrubs her with rubbing alcohol. So terrified is he of contamination. He's kind of this mix of cockiness and perverse sexual repression. Mm. On the other hand, the communists of the collective who've taken Miss Canada seem at first liberated, you know, free in their collectivism. But they rapidly fall apart into infantilism and, like, boorish behaviour. But there's another reading here. You could assume that they are genuinely free. Free to behave without our straight-laced bourgeois prudity about nudity and, you know, not getting sprays of urine in our mouth and stuff. So it really is a product of its time, I guess, because it's hard to imagine a film that celebrates the potential of communism. Mm. At one point, the Marx head on the canal boat is outfitted with a single tear, you know? Mm. And it holds up the idea of a grown man being treated like a baby. And I mean, an actual baby, as in pissing uncontrollably before being dusted in baby powder and swaddled. It's hard to imagine a film like this being presented with a straight face in this day and age.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess there just isn't room or an audience for a truly revolutionarily spirited film to appear. Mm. Hard to imagine now a guy with a golden cock could compete with the Lego movie at the multiplexes. Not that you know they'd have the same audience.
Yeah.
I think you'd, you know.
I hope not.
Yeah, exactly. I hate to think of those golden cock enthusiasts ending up watching the Lego movie. Disappointing.
Yeah, I know.
There's so much oddness and kind of transgressive material going on. I mean, I haven't even addressed the scene where a beautiful movie star gets his penis stuck in Miss Canada. That you might forget the brutal and brutally real black and white footage of corpses from Soviet massacres being torn from the earth and Nazi doctors studying, you know, dead bodies, which I guess serve as reminders or warnings about where blind attachments to political ideals can lead you.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's really, really hard to look past all the piss and shit and vomit, as I'm pretty confident it will be for any audience.
Yeah.
Nowadays you go into this. There's going to be something in this film, eh?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to reach their point with this film.
I think so, yeah.
And I'm not saying, you know, I stopped or didn't finish watching, because clearly I did, but you're going to reach a point where you're feeling a little bit queasy. A bit queasy. And here's the thing. If I haven't made it clear enough already, none of this appears to be faked, you know?
Mm.
When I say a man vomits, I don't mean he spits out a mouthful of veggie soup he's had, like, stuffed in his cheeks. I mean a guy thrusts two fingers so far down his neck that he's forced to regurgitate. And then he does this again and again, you know?
Mm.
It's basically dry retching up stuff by that stage. And when I say man pees on the table, I don't mean a guy with his back to us holding a water bottle like, you know, Adam Sandler on that poster for Big Daddy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm, of course, talking about a man's todger flopping about in full view with a spray of pee arcing out across the frame. And when I say another man cops a mouthful, well, you know,
yeah,
exactly what I'm saying. It was all too much for a host of countries who banned it. And it'll be too much for many audiences, I think, still. And I get that Makovejev is trying to sort of shock us, trying to get us to see through the film and our hang-ups or whatever, to strip us of our prejudices so that we can see his message. But, man, that's a lot of pee.
It's an awful lot of pee.
You know, and a lot of vomit. And I think likewise when Anna seduces a gaggle of young boys, yeah, she's doing exactly that. She's baring her breasts in her semi-exposed crotch, caressing them suggestively and unzipping their pants. I suspect if this was a man doing the same to a group of 8-year-old girls, this film wouldn't have as many defenders as it has, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No. That's very disturbing.
Yeah, it is, eh? I mean,
that's genuinely disturbing. And also because some of those kids are really young.
They are really young. I mean,
it's not even like 15-year-old boys. You're talking like really young.
Yeah, you're not talking like, there's a little bit of doubt about what that. Yeah. No, these are clearly kids, children, yeah, you know?
That's right.
Look, if I was to sum this up, I'd say, I'm glad I saw a sweet movie. It's messy and messed up, confronting and controversial. But I don't watch too many surrealist political polemics nowadays. You know?
Yeah.
For some reason, people don't make too many of them. Go figure. It's kind of like Jodorowsky with more steaming streams of pee, or Salo, of course, but with more to say for itself. And it's probably way less offensive than my other option, which was, of course, Jack and Jill.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I thought the cinematography was amazing in it. It had some really, really well shot. The copy we had was actually very good, I thought, didn't you?
Yeah,
I was expecting it to be kind of grainy and, you know.
No, it looked great.
It's got some familiar faces in there as well. John Vernon, who's
Mr. Capital.
The capitalist pig.
Yeah.
The American guy. Of course, he's so memorable in so many films, particularly as the dean of Animal House. But yeah, him turning up as well. I think it's very forward with its metaphors.
Yeah.
Obviously what it's critiquing. Capitalism, communism, everything. Like anarchy, the whole lot. Well, the way I saw it is taking all these systems of government and saying all of them come from a pure point, especially say something like communism, but it's kind of a eulogy to communism, how it's been subverted and used against the people that it was supposed to serve. And that's kind of how I saw that anyway. I could be wrong.
But no, I saw it the same way. It's more sympathetic towards communism because, there's the sense of communism's loss, the Marx head and the single tear, whereas capitalism never gets a fair shake there.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It looks ridiculous from the get-go and it ends up looking ridiculous. And Miss Canada's story is one of just increasing, being used and exploited.
Yeah, degradation.
Whereas you get a sense more of communism's, maybe it's failing or it's misuse, maybe. Yeah.
There's some parts that are kind of genuinely, I found quite satirical and entertaining. Like the part with at the beginning with the doctor,
who's the gynecologist
who's doing the exam as if he's on Wheel of Fortune or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it was almost like a Monty Python skit or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, and that's how it opened. So it opened with this funny, like you say, Monty Python-esque sketch.
Yeah, and how the women are grinding, almost orgasmically or whatever and lustfully. And he's like very methodical explaining his job and what he's looking for. As if he's, on a Discovery Channel program.
Until he sees Miss Canada.
Of course, and then he completely... And then it has that, like, Marcellus Wallace's case in Pulp Fiction, the glow coming off. You don't see, obviously, her vagina.
And you want to, because I expected it to be an actual rose at that stage of the game.
Yeah, and then it does that marvellous dissolve into the Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
which is hilarious. So there's some kind of real wild things like that. There's some really confronting stuff in there, but I didn't find it as, I think, say, to an extent, so like a Lars von Trier film, where like Antichrist, which is just, well, I'm going to hammer you with bleak stuff, from start to finish.
Right. The satire undercuts some of the offence you might take, and also it's not physically, no one's having their clitoris cut off, so.
No, I don't think, I don't think it's viscerally, I think you're very aware you're watching an art film.
Yeah,
I mean?
Like totally. Right from the get-go,
Yeah, and maybe that's a failing, maybe that's not. I don't know whether he wants you to... It feels like you're watching performance art.
And you are, because, of course, those guys who put on the whole display of vomiting and all the rest are a performance art... We're a performance art group in Yugoslavia.
All right.
Yeah.
Biggest, fourth best.
Fourth best. So, thanks, Dunks.
No worries. My partner Lucia watched it as well. She watched it before I did.
Yep.
And, yeah. She was disturbed by, but it's similar reaction to both of us, I think.
Yeah.
But definitely some disturbing parts there. I think the stuff with the kids is very disturbing.
Yeah.
Like that's the rest of it. You're like, well, everyone's consenting. Everyone's okay. I don't.
Yeah. No, it is. But it is physically. Like I found that dinner scene physically quite difficult.
Oh, very difficult.
Yeah.
And the ending was interesting, like with all the dead bodies, and then they kind of come to life at the end of it. But the stuff with the graves and the mass graves that they dug up, that was from Stalin. Stalin had killed a bunch of was it Polish or
I think Poles,
Polish, like thousands of them, and they had dug them up and claimed for you've heard of it many times. They claimed that it was the Nazis who did it, but then it wasn't till quite later on that the Russian, 20 years after this film was made, the Russians finally copped to this and said, yeah, we did do this with the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, so when this film was made, they were still denying.
Still denying it. And then 20 years later, they're like, yeah, we did that. Yeah. Or Stalin did that.
Yeah.
And that's really disturbing. And it almost has a, like, Waltz with Bashir-like thing, where Waltz with Bashir does that thing to distance you from it with the cartoon effects that it has, and then suddenly right at the end of it,
it does really leap into those moments.
Yeah, and it very similar. That's what flashed through my head as soon as that happened. I was like, "Whoa, what? This is pretty confronting."
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Your sister Mary is a murderess.
I don't believe it.
You go back to school, then forget Chaplin.
So that was Sweet Movie, the movie Duncan challenged me to watch. And I challenged you to watch, well, not really challenged because I'm hoping you enjoy this, The Seventh Victim, produced by Val Luton.
Yeah, from 1943. It's a young woman leaves her private school to search New York for her missing sister. Once in the Big Apple, she discovers her sister's vanished from her job and her apartment contains a noose swinging from the rafters. As friends of her sister appear alternately helpful and deceptive, Mary begins to travel a trail of murder and darkness.
Mm.
I really enjoyed this film. I got to say.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad, yeah.
And it's interesting, we were talking about Sweet Movie, and you know, it has all these conversations about communism and capitalism and the symbolism that's there. And I think this film does as well.
Mm.
And almost for what on the surface looks like a genre film, like a noir film, does force you to analyze exactly what you're watching.
Mm.
It's just kind of stacked with symbolism, especially towards philosophy and schools of thought.
Mm.
And the great lesbian, you know, undertones or overtones, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, sure, totally.
It's quite clear there. And as you said, we know with cat people and all the rest of it, which is totally, you know, in line with Val Luton and what he's done before and what he will continue to do. What this film does brilliantly is create a sense of fear from the very first scene.
Yep.
It is a noir film, but it has a real overriding sense of the gothic as well. And the opening just had me creeped out from the beginning. Like, it reminded me of an Argento film, like with the whole setup of her being in this kind of girls' school or kids' school.
Yeah.
And she's a student. And then it was all that where the authority figures are quite, like, you immediately latch onto her because you're like, she's the only one who's acting normal. Everyone else is slightly skew-iff, slightly unusual. The schoolmistress is very harsh on her. And then the other one, kind of very petrified for him, is like, don't come back here. Like, don't, you know, just escape. And that had me just on edge from the get-go. And I actually thought that was what she was going to end up going back towards. It kind of reminded me of, I spoke about The Innocents, the film. And it kind of had that same sense of just unease from the very start. And one scene that just completely blew me away was the scene where she and a detective stand in a hallway.
That scene is magic.
It is magnificent. Honestly, that's one of the best scenes I've seen this year. It's from a film that's, you know, like
70 years old. Yeah.
70 years old, yeah. So the scene where our heroine, she and a detective stand in a hallway looking towards the darkness at the end, at the literal unknown, and the way she kind of convinces him to investigate and his slow walk into that emptiness. And it's a striking sequence, literally building fear out of nothing more than sparing light and vast shadow and, you know, a little bit of music. And it's magnificent. And it reminded me of scenes like in Lost Highway with David Lynch that he does so well, where he can make a hallway seem, in someone's own house, seem creepy without, you know, there being a threat of a masked killer or anything. You just don't know what's down there.
Mm.
And that was... That's really I know Val Luton didn't direct this, but his fingerprints are all over it.
Yeah.
And his ethos seems to be, let's create fear, and let's do it economically as well, and let's do it with light and shadow and anticipation. It's a really good education on how to do something.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't know, in many films nowadays, people have the balls, for want of a better word, to try and pull that off as a major suspense sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
It's like you say, a suspense sequence which really doesn't have a lot, you know, when you break it down, but works so magnificently.
Yeah. And it has an ending as a payoff. It doesn't have a cheap scare at the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, like it has a payoff that continues on. I found that, you know, this was like out of a time when America was gripped in war. And this film presents questions of what I thought was a philosophical nature, a sense of nihilism and fatalism engulfs the characters. And then particularly the male characters that swirl around her, the optimistic writer, the pragmatic husband, the opportunistic capitalist, you know, all possible futures for our heroine and for America as well. What you find out, well, I guess it's okay to ruin it. What you find out is that Mary's sister, Jacqueline, who takes a long time to appear in that because she's continually searching for her and all these, it seems like she's just missed her or she's just behind, you know, two steps behind. And eventually Jacqueline appears, and Jacqueline is part of a group of Satanists, devil worshippers. The way that they're presented The Satanists immediately spring to mind, you know, Rosemary's Baby.
Totally. Yeah, Rosemary's Baby. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, normal appearing New York urbanites, same as Rosemary's Baby.
Mm.
But if anything, I found them even less quirky than Mia Farrow's Neighbours.
Mm.
The Seventh Victim's coven of these worshippers are actually realists. They're quite obviously clearly just normal people.
Yeah.
And wanting nothing more than to kind of live in peace. And they have this great thing where, like, non-violence is central to their beliefs.
Yeah.
And causes a swirling dilemma for the second half of the film. Because Jacqueline's killed someone. They're trying to punish her, but they can't kill her.
Mm.
So they're trying to convince her to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And that is a really hard scene to watch.
Yeah.
And I, like, now.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that a 1940s audience would have just been squirming in their seats.
Yeah.
It's kind of a group of people coldly encouraging the mysterious sister into committing suicide, as if patiently outlasting her will to resist them.
Mm.
And that's really disturbing. Like, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. And there's also a fantastic scene which immediately springs to mind, Psycho, obviously.
Yeah.
Which is when one of the Satanists, I'm not sure if you know at that point that she's a Satanist.
Yeah.
I think you might. She turns up, our heroine Mary's having a shower with the curtain there, and she walks in and you just see her shadow behind the curtain.
Mm.
And it's exactly like Mrs. Bates' shadow. Yep. In Psycho, except she doesn't pull it back and stab her.
Yeah.
She just talks to her, which is just as creepy.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And kind of says, you should go, you should leave, you know. And that's, you know, don't bother looking for your sister. But that's really disturbing and also very vulnerable. Mm. And again, it makes you think of, like, how many times have you seen back then, how many times do you see someone in the shower, especially a young woman?
No.
Probably not at all.
Yeah.
And this is a real clear indication. Remember Scorsese talking about this in his Journey Through Film documentary series, talking about the smugglers, the people who are trying to get messages into their film.
Yeah.
Into something that's just a straightforward genre piece on the surface. Mm. And this is such one of the premier, you know, examples of this.
Yeah.
It also is a film that doesn't cop out in any way. Like, the ending is very bleak.
The ending is as bleak as you're going to get.
Yeah.
It is completely. I mean, you know, Luton wasn't afraid of a bleak ending, but I don't think he really, I don't think he ever topped himself as far as an ending, just a feeling as...
Yeah, as a kick in the guts. Really,
yeah, 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 absolutely. And for the time to finish a film like that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
It wasn't common at all.
No. Well, it's interesting because it's a film visually as well that, like I say, you look at it and you go, well, on the surface, especially once you get to New York and there's people walking around in hats, and it's essentially a detective story for a long period of it. You kind of feel like it's a, you know, out of the past or a, you know, or a Bogart film. But it also has those gothic elements in there. But also it has very much a almost German expressionistic feel to it. It's a film that kind of does cross a lot of genres. And like I say, the way that it opens at the beginning with the woman saying, don't come back.
Yep.
I did think she was going to go back, and I did think that...
that was going to be it.
That was going to be the tragedy of it.
You know, Luton was in charge of the horror, the B-movie horror division of RKO.
Mm.
So he was given these ludicrous budgets and these titles and said, go away, make a film. We don't care, just make money, you know. And so they're all horror to a point.
Yeah.
But often not really, if you know what I mean. They're only... some of them... Curse of the Cat People is so far removed from being an actual horror film.
Right.
But the one thing they all are is great.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that whole, you know, the whole auteur theory that it's directors that make films. And in Luton's case, it was a producer.
Yeah.
And whether it was Mark Robson, like in this case, or Robert Wise getting his first film under his belt, or three great films by Jacques Tourneur, they all feel like Val Luton films.
Yeah.
So, you know, he made 9 films with them. And each one of them, I think, is great.
Yeah. And I was reading that Jacques Tourneur and Val Luton got separated by the studio, is that right?
Yeah.
So, because they were like, well, we've got these two guys working on this film, but they're both awesome, so why don't we split them? So
yeah, double our awesome.
Double our awesome. But, of course, they kind of don't have their awesome, but you're like, wow, those two could have made, you know, like a Powell and Pressenburg kind of situation. You know, they could have worked really well together.
Yeah.
It's like going, well, we've got Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen. Hey,
yeah,
we just want to split those two apart.
Well, Tourneur made one other great horror film, Night of the Demon, which is a great film. But Luton, of course, didn't even pause.
Yeah,
you know, he He was actually given his chance on his next film to step up to A-Pictures.
Right.
And he could work with pretty much any director he wanted, but he said, no, I'm going to use my editor from my last film, the editor from The Leopard Man, I think it was, and he's going to direct my next film because he's due. Right. And they said, well, you can either go up to A-Pictures or you can do that and stay in the B's. So he stayed in the B's.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that was Robert Wise, I think.
Right.
Who was an editor and got his first film because of Luton, basically, saying loyalty, you know, basically, being loyal to us. And frankly, also, I think he probably loved the independence he got working on the B's.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's no. That's the thing. When you watch a film like this and you go, that's 1943, that's, especially considering what was going on, what people were doing in films, it was only 2 years after Citizen Kane. Yeah, some of the set was from The Magnificent Ambersons.
Right, yeah, they reused it, yeah.
Kim Hunter as well, I didn't realise was from, because I saw her and I was like, I know you from somewhere.
Right.
And of course, she won an Oscar as Stella in Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah, and this is her debut, I believe.
I think so, yeah. Her sister, the mysterious sister, Jacqueline, almost looks like, I mean, kind of haircut and her look, almost like Uma Thurman out of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. And Tom Conway.
Tom Conway, that's right.
I enjoyed a great deal. He was also in The Cat People and played, I want to say, the same name character, but almost the same character basically in both films and perhaps even had the same name.
Right.
Which is really an interesting thing. Tom Conway was the brother of George Sanders.
Oh, right.
And was popularly known as the nice George Sanders because George Sanders was a jerk.
Oh, I can imagine.
Famously a jerk.
After seeing, was it A Voyage to Italy or Trip to Italy, right? The one that I told you about, where he's just, you know, he's such a jerk in that.
Yeah.
To you know, Ingrid Bergman, no less.
And apparently, like that in real life, just a cad.
I could imagine.
But Tom Conway, stand-up guy, apparently. Yeah. But he got his break in Hollywood because George Sanders did a bunch of a serial where he was like this detective, and he basically quit, and so they hired his brother, which is great, and that's how he got a start. Yeah.
Is this your favorite film produced by Val Lewton, do you think?
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's one I really like and one I haven't watched as much as many others, which is why I was quite keen to see what your thoughts would be. My favourite, I think I've said it before, but I could probably watch I Walk with the Zombie every day the rest of my life and still be content. That film delivers in so many ways. So if you're listening out there and you're just looking for a great Val Lewton, well, they're all good. But I Walk with the Zombie is probably the best.
Yep.
Curse of the Cat People The Cat People is amazing, obviously. But also Curse of the Cat People, which isn't really even a horror, is pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. But they're all good. Body Snatcher with Boris Karloff is fantastic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'd recommend, absolutely recommend watching Seventh Victim. And just looking into Val Lewton's stuff, I'd seen Cat People before, and I think that's the only one I've seen of his.
Right.
But this is just fantastic, and obviously adopts a lot of the similar techniques in that, the efficiency and the economy with which they create the picture, and but it's a real understanding of how to create fear and just unease from the get go. Like Kim Hunter isn't necessarily on fire in this performance, but because she's the most straightforward and normal in some ways, and these other people are just slightly off, just slightly.
Yeah,
you kind of. I was clinging on to her, especially in that first half. You're kind of clinging on to her because you think she is this babe in the woods going into New York City. And how they make New York, it's like, or just a city, seem both dangerous when people are there and also dangerous when people aren't.
Yeah.
And that's really, really smart. That's very well done. Mm. So, absolutely. Seventh Victim, if you get a chance to check it out, try and check it out. I did have a little squiz to see that this was on YouTube.
Right. Is it?
No, it's not. There are links to it, but there's not Stone Cold on there.
Yeah.
Neither is Sweet Movie, surprisingly.
No, really?
Spoiler alert.
Okay, and that's our spoiler alert special movie challenge.
Yeah, that was something a bit different for the month. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, so did I. Both of them were interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And very unusual, I'd say, for both of them.
Right.
In their own respective ways.
Yeah.
So, Simon, we are recording quite early on.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mad Max Fury Road has just come out today. I haven't had a chance to see it, but you got to be, you got the chance to go to a special screening.
Yes, I did. Thanks, Darren Bevan, for taking me along to what was probably the most anticipated movie for me. Of the year so far, and I loved it.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Excellent.
I mean, you know, there's going to be a couple of small points you quibble about in the script, but essentially mayhem from the get-go.
Excellent.
Not mayhem right through, because that would just be infuriating. Yeah. It does have a quiet patch where it slows down and it's still really just tense and suspenseful. Yeah.
Do they go to a farmhouse and there's a...
Maybe they kind of do. I don't know. I just can't give away anything.
Chop some wood, you know.
Can't give any spoilers away here. But it does go through this bit where the truck's moving through like what looks like a swamp at night, and it's like something out of some sort of horror movie, and it's just so dark. And it sort of reminded me actually of The Wages of Fear at that point with this truck sort of just, you know, moving into this doom laden, you know. So, yeah, Wages of Fury, maybe. So, yeah, loved it. Look, it's a great watch. It really is. It's going to be huge. And the reviews have been amazing, and I can see why. Charlize Theron carries the bulk of the film.
Right.
It's really not so much the Mad Max story as it is the, you know, Imperator Furiosa story. And she is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw it in 3D. My feeling is you don't want to see it in 3D. You want to see it in 2D.
Okay.
Because it was shot in 2D. Yeah. Apparently they set out to make it 3D and then abandoned that and shot it in 2D.
Mm-hmm.
So a 3D film it's a conversion of the 2D film. And I think it would be better seen without the 3D.
Yeah, it's a shame because I'd really like to see it IMAX, but yeah, I think you can only really see IMAX 3D nowadays, can't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I saw it on IMAX 3D, of course. Mm. And I haven't done this for a while, but I'm thinking about going back to the cinema and watching it again.
Nice.
But I will watch it. Like I say, I'll watch it in 2D so I can sort of judge compare what that experience is like.
Yeah.
But excellent. Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, get out and watch Mad Max.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you probably already have by the time you hear this.
Yeah, you probably already have.
Because this would be like a month later.
So. Yeah.
Thanks for the seventh victim.
Oh, yeah, and thank you for Sweet Movie.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right thing to say. But we'll see you all next month with a full-length regular podcast.
Yep.
And the song we're going out to is from Sweet Movie.
Yes.
It's called Is There Life on Earth? It's music by Manos Hadjidakis.
Right, nice. Beautiful.
And featuring Anne Lonberg on vocals.
Right, yeah. So this plays a few times, more than once actually during the movie.
Yeah.
And I did read it was a little bit of a hit.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, the movie might not have been. I don't know. But apparently the song was.
Okay.
So enjoy.
Enjoy. We'll see you next month.
Is there life on the earth? Is there life after birth? Is there life on the earth? Is there life after birth? It's a joy to be alive. It's good to be glad. Good to survive. It's great to be mad. It's fun to have nothing, do things in a nude. Oh, it's sweet to be hungry, it's finger-licking good. Is there life on the earth? Is there life after birth? Is there life on the earth? Is there life after birth? Is there life on the earth? Is there life after birth?
Why him, you monster? Why not the script girl?
The script girl. I'll eat her later.